In 1877, the earth moved with the power of a footballing giant, and the world was introduced to the beautiful game.
People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blasting the shot. What a goal! Fully the hero again.
And a podcast is following the giant in its bid for glory at the top of what it created all those years ago. This is the 77 Club.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 257 of the 77 Club. Harry, start with the socials.
Yes, the Wolves 77 Club on Facebook and Instagram, at 77 Club Podcast on Twitter. I think they're all still working. I know they all shut down the other day and they're on Spotify and YouTube and that.
Jack Williams is here.
Good evening, everybody.
Excellent. Right, Harry, well, you were there on the coach to Newcastle, St James Park. Firstly, how was the coach journey? I'm sure it was just as bad as the way back.
It was. Do you know what? It weren't too bad. It left at 8:30 and it got there just after 12:30. So,
happy days.
7 4 hours.
You were there to see Manny cross the line. He completed his 195-mile trip on foot. Lots of people actually were gathered to see him there, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Because I remember he did the Chelsea one. There was a few there then, but this must have been about five times more. There was a load of Newcastle fans there as well. There was camera crews for news channels, their Central News, Newcastle's, I don't know what it's called. What do you reckon it's called? Teesside Today? I don't know what it's Tyneside Today? Loads.
Yes. And I think he ended up raising something like 49,000 and then
15,
both stepped in 500 quid each to tip him over the 50,000 mark. So congratulations to him. But let's start with the game, Harry. 3-0 to Newcastle, a pretty depleted squad in the end. When the teams came out, no João Gomes, obviously injured from the Brighton game. So Tommy Doyle comes in, and I think it was just bad day at the office, slightly unlucky. Do you think 3-0 flattered Newcastle?
I think so, yeah. But although I got called salty quite a lot on my video I did. When the João Gomes news come out, that was a bit like, oh, really? But I don't know if we played Brighton. We looked quite leggy that game, to be honest. So, yeah, all of a sudden, the injuries are racking up a little bit. Neto and Sarr going off at half-time wasn't great. But I'll be honest, first 20 minutes... I thought we played quite well. I know we didn't have a shot on target first half, but there was an element of fortune to both of their goals, the flick off Dawson for the first and obviously a bit of a mix-up for the second. But after that, though, you know, it was only going to go one way, especially the substitutions at half-time and then a bit of a weird goal at the end. But, yeah, I definitely don't think it was a 3-0 game. As I say, the Newcastle fans disagree, but just a very leggy performance. And I think Bayliss actually said, didn't he, on our preview last week, he feels like, you know, Newcastle are going to get this one. I was confident going up into it until that Gomez news come out. Not that, you know, I thought Tommy Doyle was actually really good on the day, but it's really good having Gomez in games like that away from home. So, yeah, it wasn't to be.
Jack, Newcastle have scored in all 18 of their Premier League games against Wolves, which is an amazing stat. Only Arsenal, 26 versus West Brom and 19 versus Wolves, have faced a side on more occasions with 100% scoring record. So it feels like they were always going to score. But what were your thoughts? Because I think Dubravka had a brilliant game, made a couple of really, really good saves.
Similar to Harry's, really. And I was a bit nervous about this game too. I wasn't quite as downbeat as Dan was about it. But I think Bayliss said that it was going to be one game too far. And when you think about how the fact we, you know, played on Wednesday and the injuries are piling up, and I think it was, waiting to happen, really. Newcastle had an extra day's rest as well. And yeah, it was just kind of, I think the lineup set the tone a little bit like it does sometimes, because straight away, when you're missing Huang and Cunha up front and Bellegarde's playing in an attacking role, it doesn't do a lot for me, to be honest. It's always a little bit concerning. And then, like Harry said, missing Yao Gomez, you know, because he was injured shortly before, is a massive problem as well, because it is the sort of game that suits him. But, you know, yeah, we did play all right, but there was just nothing going forward, really. That's the problem, particularly in the first half. We had a lot of the ball, played okay. And then as soon as that first goal went in, which I agree was a bit unlucky, I think, really, because Dawson gets the tackle in, doesn't he? And it just could have gone anywhere, that ball, and it goes straight on his head, really, on his head. So disappointing, but I predictable, and then I saw it coming. But I don't think it quite justifies some of the meltdowns I've seen, because it's just, you know, a loss away at a team that was playing in the Champions League this year. And when you look at the way our squad is and how dependent we are on some of our key performers this year, like, you know, the likes of Cunha and Gomez, being without them is really going to hurt us. And I think now we're seeing, particularly with the game on Saturday and with the players that are on the pitch at the end, if you just look at who was playing, an injury or two is really going to screw us here, because we're so reliant on just that core, probably, you know, 12 or 13 players who really turn the screw for us. And as soon as you start missing some of those, it really starts to impact our overall performances, really. But Newcastle will be buzzing about that, and fair play, they've won 3-0 at home. But I think every Wolves fan watching that knows that's not quite the same team as we've seen on occasions in the last few weeks. And with those few injuries and the quick succession of games, it's really hurting us much more than it would hurt other teams. And I just hope, like I said in previous weeks on the podcast, that not investing anything in January and bringing no faces in doesn't come back to hurt us. But when you finish away on a Saturday Premier League game with, you know, a couple of kids on the pitch and your reserve keeper, then it's just not going for you, is it? So
it's a good point, isn't it, Harry? And we just go through those subs, 5 subs made in total. Obviously, Bentley for Sarr, Bueno, Traore, Chirua and Fraser. Fraser actually had a shot on goal, as we mentioned there, Dubravka making the save. And, you know, I think it's important that he gets minutes, but like Jack says, it just shows that we hope it doesn't come back to bite us when we're looking at January. I mean, we'll talk about profit and sustainability rules later on in the podcast, but, you know, that obviously comes into play. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we should have got someone in January. It's pretty obvious. Or kept one of Fabio or Kalajdzic. Obviously, we didn't know what would happen to Kalajdzic. Just as well, Noah Lamina on the bench was a surprise. And there was a 15-year-old kid on the bench as well, wasn't there? Name we can't pronounce. But I thought we might have seen Noah Lamina. But Fraser, he did okay when he come on. But it just, honestly, after the subs were made, Sarr and Neto, the away end, to be honest, was very negative. Obviously, the people have travelled a long way. And but in my eyes, like I said, first 20 minutes we were decent, and even second half, even with Fraser and Chirua, how'd you say it? Chirua, is it Chirua?
Chirua.
Even with them on the pitch, we did okay. I know they scored like right at the death, but I still think we put in a bit of effort. As I said, we looked leggy. Sarabia had a decent chance as well. But I agree with Jack. I actually did a video on my channel about it Monday about the. Getting a bit of deja vu from January 2022 under Large, when we let Traore go and didn't get any backup in, and we ended up drifting away. I hope that don't happen again. But with Cunha, Huang, Neto don't look right at the moment. He looks absolutely shattered, obviously having to come off at half-time. as we mentioned, Gomez. I think Gomez, Neto and Saar will be okay. But it was just, not good to see. And the weather as well, it absolutely pissed it down all day Saturday. So I don't know why, that just makes it seem more gloomy, doesn't it, when you lose 3-0. And I was more knackered than every player on that pitch after running up the stairs before the game as well. So one of those.
Jack, it was after a fine run of 6 wins in 9 league matches that we're actually above Newcastle going into the game, and it is almost a case of daring to dream. And you know, we are the most guilty, I think, this podcast of sort of getting a little bit too excited when we start talking about, you know, Wembley, the potential of a European tour again. But that's kind of the point of it, isn't it? Is to get excited about these things. But I think it just makes it hurt a little bit more when it seems so close at the top of the league at the moment, where, you know, a win, you're in euphoria, and then if you get a loss in the fashion that we did, you're thinking, oh, okay, it's mid-table mediocrity, which, by the way, I would have taken at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and I think it just doesn't help the fact that Newcastle were a team that we've just gone above as well, like a week ago. So it made it quite a big game on paper. And like I said last week, I'd have really fancied a draw up there would have been really good for us, because it would keep us above them and stop them, gaining 2 points ahead of us. But it wasn't meant to be. And it's just one of those where we've seen it in previous weeks after a bad result. Look at the Brentford home game. We've responded quite well, really well, really better than anyone really expected. And the reason that we are in that position is because of how we keep responding. And the Premier League is such a tough and competitive league that you're not going to win every game. Any team around the mid-table is not going to just go and win every game, because it's so difficult. And when you're trying to compete in the cup as well, and you had a tough game on Wednesday night, you know, just 3 days before, it's going to take it out of you, particularly on a small squad. So I think we just need, it's disappointing, but I think it's one of those we just need to just, you know, brush ourselves down and just move on and focus on the next game. Because if we win on Saturday, then no one will care. And we'll be back in contention again. We'll be back looking at that table saying, oh, hang on, we're back only a couple of points off 8th or 7th or whatever it might be. So it's just, I honestly just think it's one of those days. And we didn't just roll over and have our belly tickled under difficult circumstances where everything was going against us. We had a lot of the ball. There was, you know, we were a bit toothless going forward in the final third, but it wasn't disgraceful. But, I can say that as not being one of the people who had to sit on the coach for 8 hours. So maybe other people feel differently.
Was there a standout performance, Harry, in there? Reasons to be cheerful?
Not really. Tommy Doyle, maybe. Tommy Doyle's pretty decent. He tried to get ticket over, you know what I mean? Treading the ball about a bit. But apart from that, I mean, that the second goal, when I don't know who you blame, Saar or Kilman, but with the weather the way it was just one of those, wasn't it? You just, as soon as that went in, the second, straight down to the bar. And didn't rush back up, to be honest, especially when I saw the substitutions. But yeah, Tommy Doyle, if I had to say someone.
Jack, for you?
It's difficult. Everybody was about a 5, some of them a little bit less, but like maybe Semedo was okay. Probably our best defender. I don't know. But apart from that, I mean, because the team that finished the game looked so different, it was hard to say. He's definitely not an attacking player, because we just didn't have anything going forward. I didn't think, and that was the issue.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Let's move on to all things Premier League. This time at Molineux, Harry. Fulham are the visitors. We haven't actually lost in 7 Premier League home games against Fulham. That's winning 5, drawing 2. the most they played a side at Molineux without ever losing the competition, which is really great going into this. But will it be an omen that works in the opposite direction? What are your thoughts? Because I imagine there's going to be some changes. You've just said that you think Saar and Neto will be okay. Neto's mostly down to fatigue.
Before getting to us, there's a certain Adama Traore who used to play for us, all of a sudden got an assist and a goal his last 2 games, started to find form, and you just know what's going to happen. He's been coming off the bench for them, but it's written in the stars for him to do something. And Fulham, we're playing them at a bad time because they've turned a corner and they're starting to play really well. Obviously 2-1 win away at United, beat Brighton 3-0 at home convincingly. And yeah, as I say, we're playing them a really bad time. In terms of us, just got to hope, cross our fingers. I know Gary O'Neill's press conference should come out in the next few days. We've got to hope Gomez is okay. Saar, we've got to hope Neto is up to speed, because, as I say, I think he looks absolutely shattered. And then you've got to hope the likes of Fraser is good when called upon, because Hwang, you know, he's out till mid-April. Cunha might be back quicker than we know. But again, like Jack mentioned, now we've just got to hope the players we have got are going to be good enough for this running. And on paper, you look at Fulham at home, you think we should beat them. But we need Molyneux to be behind the lads like they were against Brighton. This is going to be a really tough game. If they win, I looked at the table recently, but I think they might go above us or level. And yeah, really tough game because they're in form and we're kind of not. I know we've won before Newcastle, we'd won three in a row. But the 2-1-0s, you know, hanging on a bit, not much up top. And all of a sudden, we just need a performance out of somewhere. And hopefully the lads can dig in. I'd take another scrape in 1-0, to be honest. Early goal and hang on, I'd take it. But when they bring Roadrunner on, Traore, and he gets that trick, I'm not sure I'll be happy after the game.
Jack, it could be a first league double, apparently, for Fulham in 44 attempts over Wolves, which is crazy when you think about it. But Harry made the point there, Adama Traore returning to Molyneux after leaving in the way that he did. It seemed the longest goodbye in history with, actually, what Harry mentioned earlier on, with the Barcelona transfer that just was bizarre at the time. But Traore will be knocking on the door for a start, I imagine, because he's coming on, I think, when they got the late win against Fulham, against Man United, and Garnacho's face when he came on was a picture, wasn't it? I think it was along the lines of fucking hell, which is completely fair. And obviously he got a goal in the 91st minute, I think, as against Brighton at the weekend. Do you feel a little bit sorry for Ryan Aitnori? You may have to put up with him.
I mean, if any team knows how to deal with Adama Traore, it should be us, shouldn't it, You know, just put two men on him, three if you have to, and make him have to play a difficult cross that will go in the stand, and that's it. That's how you deal with it. And so as long as we're not silly about it, and the fact, you know, the way we set up, I think, if, you know, it defensively, we do tend to look solid a lot of the time. So I wouldn't get carried away with it. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to score because, you know, we know what he's like. I think it's much more likely that other former players come back and score against us. So let's not get dragged into this. If I remember that Fulham game from early in the season, I remember going to it and I thought we were very unlucky not to get something from that. It was definitely one of those where they kind of did us over a little bit. And if that's setting them up for their first league double, then I think we owe them something. It's kind of the reverse of when I said about Brentford the other week and the fact that they owed us one. I think we deserve something, at least a point at Craven Cottage, and we just didn't get it. Was there a dodgy VR call again in that? Yeah, probably. Yeah, seems to ring a bell. I think we owe them one, but I am getting a little bit worried just because I suppose you've got to also think, you know, we've got a cup quarter final coming up. I know it's against lower league opposition, but what do you focus on if you're the manager and you've only got a handful of players? And it's just unfortunate that we're in this position, because if you said to me on Saturday, okay, we're playing Fulham at home and we had everyone fit and available, I'd be like, home win, really, really fancy us. But as soon as you start to remove players, that, like I said, the likes of Cunha, Hwang, potentially Neto, Gomez, Saar, we're a completely different team. And we go from being a team that's pushing, you know, to the top eight to a team that would be in a relegation battle, to be brutally honest. And that's not pointed at individuals or anything. It's just that core group of players that we have just play and gel so well together. So even if you lose one or two of them, it's really hard to cover. So I think, like Harry mentioned, a lot of it will be hinging on Gary O'Neill's press conference, really, because if we have a similar team to the one that ended against Newcastle, we're in trouble. And even if we've got no threat going forwards, then, you know, it's going to be difficult for us to score. So it's kind of, yeah, it's a bit squeaky bum time, really, but not for our own fault, just because of bad luck.
But Harry, do you think it is going to be a case of sort of battle of the benches? I mean, we know that we're pretty short, but when you look at Fulham with Broha, Kearney, Traore, obviously, Willian, all-star, Tim Ream as well.
No, Raul? Raul's out, isn't he?
No.
He's injured,
isn't he? Did I say Raul?
No, you didn't. Sorry, I'm just wondering if
No, he's not.
That's all right.
Traore to Raul. Yeah,
battle of the benches. Yeah, well, obviously they're going to win that battle because our bench is very light. Simple as that. I don't know. I don't know if you're going to ask us the question about starting lineup, but anyone's guessing it. There ain't much selection to pick from. Maybe he might do what he did against Brighton and play free. like Lamina, Gomez and Doyle, as long as Gomez is fit, and then just have Sarabia and Neto up there maybe. As like a 5-3-2. Mate, I saw someone suggest, I think it was on Twitter, but put in 8 Nori a bit further up and then play like someone else left wing back. But 8 Nori is one of the three up there. I'm not against that, to be honest.
Oh, wait, who do you play left wing back there? Bueno?
Maybe, yeah, put Bueno there. Then put 8 Nori. Remember Villa away under Lopetegui? I think he brought 8 Nori on as like a left attacker. And he actually did all right for the second half. I'm sure any time I can think of him actually playing there. And I think when he gets Everton in Lopetegui's first Premier League game and he ran the length of the pitch and got the winner, he'd come on like a bit further at the pitch that game as well from memory. So that ain't a bad shout. Can't see it happening, but it's an idea with how short we are. Or he's going to trust one of the kids.
Do you not think it's just baffling, though, that we've let two strikers go in January and now we're talking about basically playing up front with three wingers?
Yeah.
So we're going to have, all we'll do is cross the ball into the box and there'll be nobody there, but we'll have like 25 crosses and just nobody. Like,
it's a weird one, yeah. Jack, because I don't want to sound too moany and whingy, but we saw it coming. But then you'll have a portion of our fans who will go, stop moaning. We're 10th. We were going to go down. But when you're in this position, it wouldn't hurt to keep one of those two lone strikers or loan in another player. I know we're struggling a bit with FFP, but you can't blame some fans for being like, come on, anyone could have seen this coming. With the intensity we play at, you're going to get every single injury, you keep getting hamstring injuries because they run until they've got no bloody legs left, half the players. And it was going to happen. And we've got a tough running coming up now. We've got a small squad and it always seems to happen.
I think you've got a point, Blabe, when we're, say what you want about Huang or whatever, but we're a Premier League football club at the moment. So we're in the elite of the footballing world and we don't have a striker. I mean, like, it doesn't make much sense, does it, really? No disrespect to Frazier, but, you know, we need someone who's actually played more than 5 senior appearances, you know, at any level. So it's a difficult one because, you know, it's just too much pressure to be put on a player like that as well. It's not fair on him, I don't think. And the fact that we've got this massive network and we just really have had two injuries to players who you wouldn't argue are actually out and out strikers themselves in Huang and Cunha, and there's just nothing else there now. That's it. And there needed to be some sort of contingency plan for letting Fabio and Kalajdzic go, and it just didn't seem like there was. And you know, it's worrying, really. But I will be really gutted if we end up finishing like about 10th or something and you know, get done over in the semi-final of the cup, because the team that we're putting out, we just don't have faith in. Like I said, the starting lineup just takes so much for me, because on our day with a fully fit squad, I fancy us against anybody, and we've seen already that we can do it. But I'll be so disheartened if the league campaign peters out and we end up at Wembley in the semi-final and the team that we're putting there just doesn't live up to the reputation and the reason that we've actually got into that position. That would be really disheartening for me. But let's see. Hopefully the physios can work wonders, but
get the oxygen tents out. I suppose the difference, Harry, with Frazier, when you compare him to Fabio Silva, obviously we're both 18 and coming into the first team when it isn't really their fault and it's an injury to the strikers that mean they're there. I think the difference is probably the price tag, and that's the main one, and the pressure that comes with that. But it is a lot of pressure to put on a young man's shoulders as old as he is, but he seems pretty capable. And I suppose minutes won't do him any harm, but like Jack says, you probably agree, is that you don't want to be, you know, potentially, I mean, even the quarterfinal, to be honest, you know, we've got to get past Coventry first, let alone thinking about Wembley. And, you know, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, and well, he's 19 now, Frazier, so will that
help? That's true. Yeah, he's all right. But he's banging him in then.
I think a really telling sign was when Hwangi Chan got injured in the warm-up for the Sheffield United game, and you could tell he looked hurt, he still played him, and you got Frazier sat on the bench. So Gary O'Neill don't think Frazier's ready either. That right there is proof when he played Hwang that game. So, yeah, obviously the fans won't give Frazier stick because he's a local lad and he's young. Like when Fabio Silva was filling in for Raul, at first, obviously everyone backed him, but then obviously the people got frustrated eventually. So yeah, it's just one of them. I mean, we might get lucky. He might have a little decent run. He took his goal really well against Brentford in that FA Cup replay. But if he starts against Coventry or something, because we have to, you can't believe we're in that position, can you? And I've seen a stat here about Coventry. They've got like second most goals, haven't they, in the English pyramid in 2024. So it's not a good stat to read when we're about to play him in the quarterfinals. So yeah, Frazier, I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's all right when it's mid-January, but when it's the beginning of March, you think, oh, okay, there might be.
I think it's going to come back to bite us, though. But I know we're seeing all these things about Coventry, which are making us doubt ourselves. But sticking five or six, whatever it was, past Rotherham is very different to playing a Premier League team. So, you know, I'm not saying it won't. I'm not saying it's going to be easy by any stretch. But let's be confident, because we should be confident, even if we do have to bring in a few fringe players.
It's a dream draw.
It's a semi-final that I worry about. But
well, let's worry about when we get there. John in the comments says, "Is there a place for Doherty in the starting 11?" Harry, do you think that's the case? Do you think it could be a Semedo moving on to the left-hand side if it needs to shore things up a little bit?
It'll be, if Doherty does come in instead of Hugo Bueno, it will be Doherty left wing back, won't it? We've seen it before. But I'd probably go with Hugo Bueno, although he hasn't been very convincing, has he, to be honest, since he's come back from his injury.
Doherty's very low confidence, I think.
Yeah, so maybe if that weird thing that we were on about of Aiden Ori does happen, which probably won't, just throwing stuff out there, maybe Doherty will be in. But maybe put Doherty up front, because he's good at finishing. So put him in front instead of Frazier.
Stranger things have happened.
That's a joke before we start getting abused.
Let's do a score prediction, Jack.
It's really hard to say. Can you ask me at like 2 o'clock on Saturday and I'll reassess? Because it really just depends, doesn't it? I really felt that we'd lose last week. I felt that we'd lose against Brentford. I don't feel the same about this game. I think we'll get something. I'm not saying we'll win, so I'll go 1-1.
Harry?
Yeah, I'll be different, but my first instincts when you asked the question was to say a draw, but I'm going to be confident. I'm going to say Gomez, Neto, Saar will all be fit, and I think we'll win 2-1.
2-1. I'm going to go 2-1 Wolves as well. The betting looks pretty tight. Wolves 6-4. Fulham are 7-4. The draw is 12-5. Let's have a look at some silly bets, because I love a silly bet, hence why my betting account is awful. Neto, Bellegarde to score, Wolves to win, Sarabia to be carded will get you 80-1. Both teams score, Semedo, Robinson and Pelinha to be carded is 100-1. And then let's do some really, really, really stupid ones. Let's have a look. Neto, Bellegarde, Sarabia to score, Wolves 3-0, 500-1, which is also the same odds as Sarabia, Bellegarde and Neto, and Wolves to win 4-0. So there you go. Lots of value out there if you want to do some stupid, stupid bets.
And then the FI? Sorry, Sam. Wolves FI is on about Enzo Gonzalez in the comments. We haven't seen him, have we? Oh, he's injured. No. There we go. See, cheers, Steve Dickens. That clears it up.
There you go. I don't think
Palace away when we lost 3-2 early on the season. He'd been on the bench that game. Apart from that, we haven't really seen him, but there we go, he's injured.
Yeah, we won't see him for the time being. Let's move on to FFP. So Wolves look set to avoid breaches of Premier League spending rules despite a record loss, of £67.2 million for the financial year to the 31st of May 2023. That was kind of the feeling, wasn't it, Harry, that we were going to avoid these. It seems to be a little bit better than first thought, but still registering that kind of loss isn't great.
No, and what was that? Remember that article that came out and that uni student was saying we were really close. Turns out we wasn't, so don't trust that. I can't even remember the name of the...
Football Insider, was it, I think?
Football Insider. So you just... Yeah.
You know, don't trust people, randomers off Twitter, for God's sake.
I mean, these are records that come out from, is it last year? It's not even for this one, is it? But the fact that we sold all these players in the summer just gone... They're making sure, aren't they, that we don't get stung by FFP, which, if you ask most Wolves fans, is what they've got to do. But then it goes back to, can't they just do a little bit, like loan someone in and things like that? But you can't accuse Jeff and Fosun of not running us financially. You know, they run us quite well, don't they? Although we get really frustrated with their funds and recruitment and that. It's a hard balance, isn't it? It's a really hard balance.
Right, you say that. I mean, if I was in charge of like a FTSE 100 company and I lost 67 million and the year before that I lost 46 million, it probably wouldn't be great.
But it's football.
Yeah, exactly. Jack, I suppose it shows the state of football and elite football, as they call it.
Yeah. this is just a very frustrating topic at the moment for me, because I've said before, I just hate the name of it because of financial fair play. And I've seen lots of tweets from Villa fans, Everton fans, all these other clubs, Forest fans who are in and around it. Newcastle, I think, are going to be in trouble soon as well. And the list is stacking up, and there's all these articles written about how these clubs are close or they're going to be done by financial fair play. Obviously, we've had our own articles, but no one ever talks about the top six or the big six, do they? There's never any articles about them. And like I said, Chelsea can just go and spend £1 billion on absolute shite, and that's perfectly fair. Absolutely fair. Don't worry about that. That's fine. But if Nottingham Forest or Everton spend a 3 week late bill, then they dock and points. So there's nothing fair about it. But I'm glad that Fosun have obviously, you know, kept us on the right side of it. And I did have a suspicion linking in with that, and the fact we were so close, that because we were in such a good position, it come January, that's the reason why they didn't invest, because they were banking on the fact it would be an absolute disaster for us to go down from this position, and very unlikely. And with the way they did invest the season before, when we really needed it, because we would have gone down otherwise, I think you kind of have to give them a bit of a break really overall. But it is just frustrating from a pure fan point of view, who, let's be honest, none of us really understand the businesses and the intricacies of running a football club, that we might just fall short because we didn't invest in January, of, you know, fall short of something really good. But you know, at least we're in the Premier League. So you're just torn, like Harry said. I'm torn between this mentality of, I want to win something really badly, I don't care what it is, and I want to be in Europe again, versus, I should just be grateful for what I've got. And I'm just on the cusp of both of them. I don't know.
Well, we always want more, don't we? And I think because we've had a taste of it back in 2019 and a tiny little bit of 2020, is that you obviously want to do it again, and that's great. But, you know, I think the point on what it's called, financial fair play, they seem to be moving away from that now, don't they? Because it's more profit and sustainability that they sort of go along the lines of now. But Harry, do you take that point? You know, 115 charges against Man City, clearly very, very good accountants there, playing the game a little bit, you guess?
Yeah, it's an absolute bollocks. It does feel like they get more better treatment in the top six. Everyone can see it. It's blatant. What's going on with Everton and Forest? Have Everton had their points reduced as well? It's gone down to four or six or something, I've seen, and Forest have still got theirs to come. It's all up in the air, isn't it? It's all confusing.
Yeah, it is weird when you have this. It's no good for anybody at this stage in the season to have the possibility of further points deductions hanging over them. But, you know, I know people will say, well, they shouldn't have done it in the first place, which is fair enough, but it's no good for them. It's no good for the teams around them, because it can be giving them false hope. And it's just a mess, really. But, you know, what do you do about it? And I wouldn't care as much if it just felt as fair. And I know those big six teams are going to have much higher amounts of revenue. But at the same time, there's stories about Man City who, like, they sell their stadium to one of their other companies for a gazillion pounds, even though it's the same people, and say that's revenue that they can declare against it. And there's all these creative workarounds where the best teams will have the best accountants and be able to exploit it to their benefit. So, yeah, I'm glad if they are stopping to call it financial fair play, then that'll stop annoying me as much. But that's just what it's known as now, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I saw something today on, I think, sleeve sponsors, and there was going to be a potential clampdown on that, because it's the same sort of thing. It's just inflated partnerships, isn't it, of something that's obviously quite close to the football club, and it's basically cheating. But Southbank Matt on Twitter, I think, Jackie, you might put this on in the group. The Premier League is now an impossible place for any newly promoted side or any teams who dares to challenge the league's elite these days. If class doesn't get you, VAR probably will. And if you escape that, FFP will be there to firmly put you back in your place. So has he got true. A point, or is it just a small tin pot club mentality?
It does feel that way, and because you're talking to Wolves fans now about VAR, and to their credit, I think we've had a couple of games recently where there's been some actual fairly decent refereeing, which obviously then we don't talk about it as much, do we? But the first half of the season, it was getting to one of those stages where we're just thinking, is this just pure corruption, really? Particularly, you know, the game away at Man United and some of the other ones. But I can see how it feels like that for some teams, yeah. Because whatever they do, and obviously they've got the best hand anyway. All these bigger clubs, but there is still definitely a level of bias, whether it be unconscious or not, that runs through everything from football from the top to bottom, whether that be Man City's 200 charges that just seem to be put on the back burner because they're winning stuff all over the world, or whether it be VAR decisions that if it was the opposite team who did it to Man United would get a penalty. And otherwise, it's just waved on. So it's definitely there, and I will die on the hill that it's definitely there still.
Just on the elite and top six and whatever, it's just reminding back when the Super League might have come round. The new format of the Europa League and the Europa Conference League and the Champions League. This new, it feels like they're warming us up for when they do the Super League, when they try and do it again. And if Wolves get into the Europa Conference League or the Europa League this year, we've got that new weird format now, isn't it? It's like a big league, and then it's split into knockouts, so they're really milking it now.
I didn't look into it too much because I just looked at the video that was posted on Twitter. I was like, oh, this is ridiculous. And I think I said to you guys that any league where you don't play every team, it's not a league. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You're just basically going off the look of the teams you've been drawn to play. And you know whether you get a good home advantage or not. So it's really, I think it's more anti-competitive. And the good, do we actually want another league? We play league matches all the time. What we do is play league matches. Like, do we not want like a big, good? Like, I'd rather just be a straight knockout. At least that's exciting, you know. Rather than even having a group stage. But they seem to have gone the other way with this league, and they say that at least everyone will be there on merit, because there was talk at one point about them like saying, oh, you know, if 1 year Real Madrid don't qualify, we'll just let them in anyway, because they'll say they'll have a good previous record. And is that died a death now, or is that still a thing? I don't know, but I've given so little time to it. But to be honest, I barely watched any Champions League football or Europa League football this
year. So boring.
It's so boring.
The group stages and the early knockout stages, I don't bother. It's boring.
Maybe they do need to change it. I think the last European game I watched was West Ham's in the Conference League last season, the final. But
the thing for me is there's too many teams in it now, and there's too many competitions. I mean, as much as I want Wolves to get in this Mickey Mouse Europa Conference League thing, it shouldn't be there, should it? It should. Yeah. Like back in the day when it first started, it was literally just the champions of each league, wasn't it? Like back when Forest won it, it was like a complete knockout, just the champions of each league, and it was more pure now because there's so much money involved in it. I mean, they'll have bloody 18th in the Premier League in it soon if they carry on. It's like they're inviting everyone. But just on Steve Dickens, I'm just going to get this one up. He's put, trouble is nowadays for Wolves to win anything when you have to be in the Championship. I disagree, because there's not much money in the League Cup and the FA Cup now. No one cares about it anymore. They always play their second string team. So in the next 5 to 10 years, we could win the League Cup or the FA Cup where we are, if we're still like a mid-table Premier League team. Because look, we see it, don't we? Look where we've got this year. Because the amount of teams that don't take it too seriously in the early rounds, get a bit of luck like we have and have a little bit of a run. And then you find yourself where we are. Yeah, so I disagree with that. I think we could potentially win the League Cup or the FA Cup in the next 5 to 10 years.
I mean, he may potentially mean that the thing that we'd win if we were in the Championship would be the Championship rather than a cup.
No, I know, but he's saying that if to win any trophy, we'd have to win the Championship. That's what he means, but I disagree. I think in the Prem, for a mid-table Prem team, we could win one of those two cups, because there's no prize money in it now. What do you get for winning the FA Cup? 3 million?
It's a million for being the losing semi-finalist, so I'm guessing it's 2 million, or probably 2 or 3 million for winning.
Would you get 100 million for coming 20th in the Premier League?
I agree with you, Harry. I think we've got a shot at it, and we've already proven that we're a team the same under Nuno who can beat the so-called bigger clubs. So, and we've seen in the past that teams who aren't from the established big six have won it, Leicester and Portsmouth and Wigan Athletic or whatever.
Wigan, yeah.
You know, so it is possible. But the one thing that I don't want to come of this is if we do go on and win it this year, is everyone be like, oh, you had an easy draw, because we've had two Premier teams already. So I don't think we've had an easy run at all. We had an easy quarter final on paper. Obviously, nothing's banked yet. I know, but that's why I'm being cautious about it, because you know what we're like. But I don't think our run has been particularly easy at all. When you throw Albion in the mix and our record against them, I think it's been tough. That's what I mean. Brighton and Brentford, two Premier League teams, Albion. And then we had the best draw on paper in the quarterfinals, but let's see what that actually means.
Yeah, and I think on the point of the Europa League is that really the elephant in the room is that we don't want to get into the Europa League because of the quality of the football. We want to get into the Europa League because we're never in Europe and we want to go on holiday. And that's it. That's the only reason. I'm not going there for the quality of football. Couldn't care less.
It's It's really hard, like for most people listening and for most people in life, especially if you've got you know, families and partners, to justify just going away with your mates for 2 days to get pissed. But if you use football as an excuse, it's much easier to sell. If you go and say, sorry, love, we're going to Bratislava for 2 days just with me and my mates, and then 2 weeks later we're going to Istanbul. That's a tough sell. But it if is, you've got footballers, I've got to go because, you know, Wolves have never played in Europe in my lifetime or whatever. Yeah. Then
can I go to Barcelona? Have you got a ticket? No. Right, okay, let's move on to something else I saw. It's the 25th anniversary this week of the last all-English Premier League starting 11, which is just crazy when you think about it. I'm surprised it's been that long. And like Jack said before we started recording, probably unlikely to ever happen again. But there is a Wolves link to the story, and it's a goalkeeper called Michael Oakes, for people who remember Michael Oakes. He was in goal for Villa. The rest of the team was Steve Watson, Ricardo Skimaker, Gareth Southgate, Alan Wright, Paul Merson, Ian Taylor, Simon Grayson, Lee Hendry, Julian Josham, and Dion Dublin. So that got me to thinking, Harry and Jack, I don't know if Jack's done one, but an 11, a Wolves Premier League 11 who are English. And I thought, oh, well, this would be easy. I'd probably have to try and figure out, you know, there's going to be a couple of players. And it's really difficult. Harry, I want to start with mine. I want to see how many we've got the same and what formation you're playing. But before you tell me what you got, what formation have you got?
I've gone for the five, what we play now, basically, the 5-2-3.
I've done 5-2-3 as well. It should be interesting.
So we're going to have the same team. Go on, you do yours.
I'm going to do my right back last. I've got John Ruddy in goal. I think that's fairly obvious.
Don't skip over that. Don't skip over that, because Matt Murray did have one appearance, but we kind of said you can't have Matt Murray in if you had one appearance in the Premier League.
Of course you can.
It was Oakes. Do you reckon?
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah, he's played in the Premier League. That's it. You know, and
I can go in yours. See who agrees with you. Right, I'm going in John Ruddy. Yeah. I won't say I'm a right back as yet because I think that's the one we all got stuck on. I've got three centre backs. I was torn between these. I've gone for Jody Craddock, Connor Cody, and Max Kilman as centre backs. I've got Lee Naylor. He didn't play.
Yeah, but Lescott didn't play. He didn't play in the Prem. He was injured. He was injured in 03-04.
Did not play.
His caps got done, didn't they? He didn't play one game.
Yeah. Otherwise, he'd been straight in there. Lee Naylor at left back. Then I got Paul Ince and Carl Henry in midfield. And then up front / wingers, I've got Michael Keightley on the right, got Matt Jarvis on the left, I've got Ebanks Blake in the middle.
Right, Sam, ours is slightly different.
I haven't got my right back. Slightly. Let's see what Harry's
got. So, Ruddy / Murray, but Jack, one appearance in the Premier League, you can't have Matt Murray. So I'll stick with Ruddy in goal, English goalkeeper. Right. Who'd you do right back? Do you want to say it, Sam?
I'm gonna save it till the end because I think that's almost
right. I'll save my right. So I've gone what we play now, the 5-2-3. So I've gone Kilman, Cody, and the difference, I haven't had Craddock, I've had Dawson.
Oh yeah, good.
Craig
shout.
Dawson. Good yeah, shout. I've had Dawson instead of Craddock. Left back, obviously Lee Naylor. Midfield, I've gone for Carl Henry. I did have Paul Ince and I changed it.
Who too?
They had the similar amount of appearances. Paul Ince obviously played one Premier League season for us, scored a couple of goals. David Jones played two Premier League seasons and a bit of a third. He scored that amazing free kick against Stoke. He scored that goal against Tottenham after that amazing move. Yeah. So for me, he had a better time with it in the Premier League with Wolves. Ince was probably a better player and he was at the end of his career for us. But I switched it out and put David Jones as the other midfielder, which is probably going to cause a controversy. Yeah.
I like that.
And the front three is the same. Keightley on the right wing, Ebanks Blake for the middle. Jarvis, just some notables are up front. The other ones obviously weren't nowhere near, but Cole Court and Daniel Sturridge. But he only made like three appearances in the 03-04.
Did Cole Court play
quite a few games?
He played
quite a lot. Yeah. With him and Henry Kamara up front, weren't it? The last half. But obviously, it's Ebanks Blake. But yeah, David Jones, right back. Go on then. You've gone for right back, Sam, because this is hard.
Jack, have you got one or not? Have you got
no? No, I didn't. Sorry.
That's right.
Shall I go first?
Yeah, go on.
So my logic, because obviously in this formation, it's really a right wing back. And I remember him playing there once or twice where he was kind of forced for injuries and that, but I've gone for Ryan Bennett.
Oh, see, he was on my list. He was a notable mention for centre-back, but I went for Michael Mancian.
Was he a right-back there? He was a centre-back. He was more of a centre-back. He could play there, yeah.
Well,
but he might maybe play centre-mid or centre-back. But Ryan Bennett did sometimes play right-back in a four in his career, I think, very rarely. But there was one or two games where he ended up right wing back just as a temporary. So I couldn't think of anyone else. There was Mark Little, but he didn't make an appearance at all back in McCarthy's era.
Yeah.
But all the rest, there's so many like Irish and Scottish, but English.
Right wing backs have been Irish mostly. We go back right backs, Kevin Foley.
So the other notables, Lescott definitely didn't play, did he?
No.
No. Obviously, you had Craddock. Roger Johnson.
Jamie O'Hara.
Jamie O'Hara as a midfielder. Tommy Doyle was another shout for midfield.
Yeah, I don't think he's played enough, but yeah, I take the point.
Paul Butler. Is he English? He didn't play in the Prem, did he? Oh, he did.
But you wouldn't pick him over Kilman or bloody Dawson.
Guess who else I put in as well, who I flirted with, but I think Tommy Doyle would get in over this person. Morgan Gibbs-White.
Gibbs-White is another one, yeah.
Yeah, Sean Newton is one of the wingers, but obviously Coakley and Jarvis held that down.
Jamie O'Hara, yeah. Paul Butler played for Ireland, by the way.
I think it says a lot about just our standard of whether you say English players or you know our lack of Premier League history, that I'm quite confident that both of your teams will get relegated from the Premier League.
I think they were.
it's a championship attacking it, let's be honest.
Coakley, Jarvis and Ebanks Blake.
It's literally championship.
100 goals a season, that is. Carl Henry and David Jones in midfield, the absolute steal in there.
Martin in the comments, he born in England, absolutely correct, from Moston in Manchester, and played for Republic of Ireland. So there you go. Nice little game to finish off there. But we will say goodbye for him this week. Best of luck. Hopefully see you on Saturday against Fulham. But we'll say goodbye to Harry Mansell.
Sorry, just before we go, Sam, Jack, was my team better than Sam's, that English 11? You agree, don't you?
I think it was just for players like Dawson, yeah.
Yeah,
you've got to pick Dawson over Craddock.
Okay, I just wanted to get that in there.
Which one of you dropped Paul in? Sorry, because I think you've got to put
me. I did for David Jones.
See.
Craddock had quite a few Premier League goals, to be fair.
Did Paul in score a free kick like David Jones did against Stoke? I don't think so. Remember that when he flicked over himself far and in.
But you can also use Paul Ince's like other Premier League illustrious career to count.
It's all about their time at Wolves. If that's the case, Michael Oates should be in goal. He had a better career than John Ruddy.
We're going to leave it there for this group.
No, we're not. We're going to carry on.
We'll say goodbye to Harry Mansell.
David Jones is English. He is English. Goodbye. Someone put his Welsh.
And it's a goodbye. Goodbye from Jack Williams. And it's a goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.